Persuading people to take the actions we want can be hard. Our teams and clients are bombarded with thousands of messages every single day. But there is a way for you to get above the noise. Stories. This is the Stories with Traction podcast, and I'm your host, Matt Zahn. Join my guests and me as we unpack the power of storytelling. We'll talk about topics like leadership, sales, and marketing all through the lens of strategic storytelling. Enjoy this episode. In January, I spoke in Houston and met someone who shared a powerful story with me. I had to have her on the Stories with Traction podcast. So today I'm joined by Yui Culbertson, who is the president and CEO of Culbertson Resources Incorporated. Welcome to the show, Yui.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. And when you had shared your story with me back in January, I felt it really compelling. When I heard your story, it just really exuded grit, and it was just an incredible immigrant story. So can you dive into that?
Sure. I have 8 sisters and 1 brother, and we were all born in South Korea. And my parents made a decision to leave South Korea in 1972, and we all flew to Corpus Christi, Texas.
So that must have been a crazy culture shock, is it not?
Oh my gosh. Because the only thing I saw on TV in Korea was blonde and long-legged blondes and mansions. And when we got to Corpus, I don't think I saw one blonde-headed person. And I was like, where are the mansions? Anyway, it was a very big shock. Yes, we lasted there about a year, and then my family moved to Houston, Texas.
All right. So that's still a culture shock. So take me through a feeling. Are you excited? Are you fearful? What was the main feeling when you first arrived in the United States?
I think there was a lot of fear. We left a very comfortable environment. Labor is very cheap in Korea. So we had a couple, live-in nannies that kind of helped us through it all that. And we come to another country. We're like, one little room apartment with no help, and nobody spoke English. And my dad came a little earlier, actually, and he started working as a mechanic. It was quite interesting because back then, back in the 70s, there really was no any other Asian kid that I recognized. I went to about as white school as there is in Bel Air and Meyerland area in Houston and Bel Air High School. And then I went to Texas A&M. I mean, it didn't get any whiter. So, I think I just remember just trying to fit in. I just remember, and I try to master that, English. I was a little more advanced in math, I guess. So what they did was they just put me to first grade and let me learn the ABCs to kind of catch up.
Did you say Bel Air High School?
Bel Air High School.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I was raised in Harford County, Maryland, and there was a Bel Air High School. It's funny.
Oh, really?
To hear you say that. Yeah, for sure.
This is like in Meyerland area in Houston, which, kind of a nice area, but yeah, it was, I don't even know the feeling. It was just kind of crazy. We were kind of raising ourselves because my parents, it was kind of looking back, it was really sad how hard they had to work. My mom, being a very strong business person in Korea, had it started out by cleaning hotel rooms in Holiday Inn. My older sisters went to work and they pulled their money and bought their first gas station.
Wow.
And it's a pretty, a lot of people know about it. They had it for like 30 years. It's right at Shepherd and Durham, which is kind of center of Houston. And they had it for a long time. And they were like workhorses. Basically, they worked 18-hour days and made sure that we all got our education because they knew that was a path forward because they didn't have that opportunity in Korea. So if we went to school, they were going to pay for our college. There was not going to be any debt. School was very important to them because I think it was denied for my parents, or at least my mother. My dad was college educated.
All right. So you have your parents, 8 sisters, 1 brother. And did I hear you say you moved into a 1-room apartment when you first got to the United States?
Yes, basically. It was like everybody was, my youngest sister was, we're all born in Korea. So my youngest sister was only 6 months old.
So how did you handle that? How was even that something to overcome? Did it help you when it came to communication or learning how to work with people? Take me through what skill set someone would acquire by living in a 1-bedroom apartment with roughly a dozen other people.
We were very young. So I think you kind of get used to that. But And, you know, I didn't look at it as a bad experience. In fact, the house we moved into after that, we were only in that apartment for like probably less than a year, 6-7 months. And then my parents bought a house. But the house we moved into wasn't much bigger than the house myself right now. I think that what it does teach you is that, I mean, you become very resilient and you're not given anything and you become very self-sufficient too. And we had to worked hard to support our parents. It's the other way around, you know, where parents try to support you. But I think for us, we knew how hard they were working so they can go to college and do all that. So we took it on ourselves to make sure we keep the house in order, cook meals, and everybody kind of pulled together, worked as a team.
So based on this experience and all the grit that it would take to do this, did school come easy for you then? Because, you know, if this was so hard, did it make other things in life easier?
Easier in sense that when you watch somebody go through that kind of obstacle, yeah, everything seems, it really is, there were a lot of things that were non-negotiable, like making it in life, hard work, picking yourself back up. Even for my recruiters today, when they say they can't do something, the conversation usually goes, well, let's just kind of figure this out. You can or you will not. And they're always taken back. But I think when you have a parent that didn't even speak the language, that can send kids to college, you know, just through hard work and grit, when they say America is really a land of opportunity, it really is. And if they can make it without speaking the language, I really didn't have any right to say that I couldn't do anything with my parents.
Sure. So, all right. So speaking of your recruiters, that's a great segue into the next phase of your life, business. So from school, did you recognize that you had like an entrepreneurial type spirit, or was there an aha moment where you said, hey, I'm going to go into business? What was that like?
I think based on your personality, you get different message from your parents. And I was probably a little more like my mother, that was a little more driven in that way. But I felt like I had the better chance because I spoke the language. I went to college. Well, initially in college, I was just going to try to graduate college just so I can go to work. I thought about at one time taking art class. And I remember my mom saying, well, you're going to have to pay for your own college. And I said, really? And she goes, well, you're not going to make any money going to art school. And I said, well, I guess I'll take accounting. And she goes, okay, you can draw on your own time. I mean, really, they were like no nonsense people. They gave me 4 years to graduate and that was it. But my dad's the point was there's all these cars waiting in the driveway to get out. So you can't block the driveway. So, I mean, when you're under that kind of deadline and discipline, you just get it done.
Sure. So why recruiting? What sparked that in you?
Well, you know, so I was an accountant for 5 years and I hated probably every minute of it. And I just remember thinking I was trying to figure out who I was, where I'd be good at. And a recruiter called me to place me somewhere else in accounting. I guess he saw my personality and he said, have you thought about being a recruiter? And, back then, this is going back 30 years. I mean, I didn't even know what recruiting was. I mean, it certainly isn't what it is today. But I liked what it represented. He said, you're not going to get paid anything, but sky is the limit. And he told me that I could win a trip to Cayman Islands and I can take my boyfriend. And I said, I'm in. I figured I was going to give it all I got for a year. And if I didn't make it, then I'll find something else I'd be passionate at. But I felt like it made sense to me because I was able to leverage my accounting degree. It wasn't a wasted 4 years. And I could get into something that I could potentially make unlimited amount of money, I guess.
Sure. So from when you started, what does the business look like today from when you started? Is there a different focus? Are there certain industries that you're helping fill roles for? Where is it today?
Yeah. So, you know, my background is accounting and finance. And, you know, I do kind of executive recruiting in that space. But, you know, we're into engineering, oil and gas, a little data science consulting work. And it's actually putting the business together is a lot more harder than I thought. Being a recruiter was much easier than putting a business together. It was 10 years of really hard work.
So speaking of family and speaking of business, so I have three children myself, and my oldest, his name's Elliot, and he's constantly talking about business, right? He wants to start a business. He wants to be a business owner. So based on what you're saying on just the difficulty in launching and sustaining a business, if you were to give my nine-year-old advice for the future regarding business, what's one piece of advice that you would give him?
Talk less, listen more.
So let's talk about that. Is that for clients? Is that for team members? Where would that be applied?
Everything. I think it's in everything. You know, recruiting success came fairly easy for me. That was my natural talent. But that didn't mean it prepared me to be a business owner. You know, and hence that's why I joined, you know, Vistage, so that there's so many moving parts. I wanted a business that I can scale a little bit. And that's a whole other conversation than just being a business owner of an independent small business owner. Yeah, I mean, you have to be a really good student is what I would say.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say, you know, listen more than you speak, because I've had the opportunity now in the last 4 years to travel all across the United States. I've spoken now in almost every U.S. state, every industry, tons of different businesses, a lot of successful people. And there is one reoccurring theme that I was shocked. So if you would have told me this before I started doing this, I wouldn't have believed it. But one of the reoccurring themes is humility. It's amazing how there are some uber successful people out there that you would never know the depths of their success. I can't tell you how many times I'll go into a business and I'll be shaking hands and someone will say, do you know who that is? They'll say, that's the owner of the entire company. Like, these are massive companies, right? And you would never pick them out in a crowd that you know, they run the whole enterprise. So I think it's interesting because, you know, in mass media, Hollywood shows, we don't really view the individual that is the business person as a humble person, right? It's not an attribute that correlates to the Hollywood image. But it's interesting that in real life, like they are listening, they are taking feedback, they are growing, they are developing. So I really appreciate you mentioning that. I think that's an outstanding point.
No, I think you're right. I find that because I you know, a lot of my friends are business owners, and I find that the most successful ones are the quieter ones, you know, ones that got the humility piece and vulnerability piece. And that's how they grow and learn. And so, I mean, I had to learn from that. I think being a recruiter, it's a little more of an egomaniac kind of work. But what I find, some of my biggest rivalry are people that really know how to listen.
Sure. So take us through the next, let's say, year. What are some goals that you have on the horizon for your company?
The part of the difficult thing was really stabilizing my back office. You know, and that's what a lot of people don't get, you know, and I think the pandemic was good for me because it allowed me to look inward. I mean, it shouldn't have taken the whole world to slow down for me to slow down, but it did. And I really appreciate it. I actually enjoyed that time to really focus on. I streamlined everything of my back office during that time. Wow. And anything that could be done online that I did, accounting and finances back office, all our accounting is done there. That way our support is. That it's allowing me to be able to scale, you know, from this point forward. And that's probably the biggest thing about running a business that a lot of people don't know is finding that stability so that you can grow.
Sure, sure. So for anyone listening that might be interested in your services, what you do, do you have a specific territory, specific roles? What's your main focus in regards to recruiting?
Accounting and finance work is my space. First, you know, 10 years of my career was a lot of it is SEC focused, technical, but we do a lot of operational accounting, oil and gas, engineering, and data science.
Okay.
Those are the three area buckets that we're really focusing on at this time. You know, we do a lot of work in Houston because we're located here, but a lot of the work can be nationwide. We do Dallas, some in New York. So, you know, with all the internet and stuff, it's becoming a global world. So.
Sure. Okay. And if someone wants to get more information or they want to reach out for your services, where's the best place they can go to get that information?
Our website, my last name, culbertsonresources.com.
Perfect.
And it should have all our contact information on there.
Perfect. I will include that in the show notes. People could just click and go. You know, I really appreciate this conversation. I appreciate listening and hearing stories like this. It shows what happens when people are forced to
yes.
utilize grit, right? And you've
yes.
done that. You've really done that. And I think based on what you've done, you know, you're an extremely successful businesswoman, but yet you still talk about listening more than you speak. And I think that is an incredible skill set that we could all learn from. So thank you so much for your time today. And thank you for this conversation.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the Stories with Traction podcast. please leave a review, since positive reviews will make it easier for others to find this conversation. Next episode will launch on Friday at 8 a.m. Eastern. Until then, remember, if you want to persuade with power and inspire those around you to action, you must share more stories.